Our final argued case this morning is Blackhawk Network v. Interactive Communications International, 2022-1650. Mr. Newman, when you are ready.
May it please the Court. The Patent Trial and Appeal Board erred as a matter of law in this case, where on a record where both Mr. Hutton, the petitioner's expert, and lead counsel for petitioner during argument, conceded that there is no express disclosure of the payment confirmation limitation, and yet the board refused to apply this court's precedence on inherency. And so in this instance, where this limitation was presented under this court's precedence regarding an anticipatory disclosure, we have a concession from Mr. Hutton that the payment confirmation limitation is not expressly taught. We have a concession or an admission by lead counsel for petitioner to the board during argument that payment confirmation is not taught.
The board said it logically follows that the game provider system possessed the necessary information.
Judge Lurie, that finding by the board is not supported by the record below. The board made that finding not on the basis of Mr. Hutton's declaration that says that payment confirmation must be present in Shrek, classic language of anticipation, or I'm sorry, of inherency. And it's concededly not an obviousness-based argument here. In the opposition brief at page 16, counsel for petitioners concede that they did not make an obviousness argument in their petition. The obviousness argument was an alternative argument that was presented in a reply brief, and are even adamant in their briefing here to this court that the board did not make an obviousness finding as to this limitation. And so if the board had no substantial evidence.
The board said, we are persuaded that Shrek's description would have suggested to a skilled artisan that the store back office 240 would include an instruction to cause payment confirmation. You disagree?
I disagree because this court's precedents, including the Eli Lilly case, the personal web technologies case versus Apple, recognize that.
Well, this case, like so many, isn't determined by other cases. Each case depends on its own facts, and we've got facts here that you disagree with, but they're findings of fact, aren't they?
They're findings of fact by the board on pages 43 and 44 of the appendix that are not supported by any substantial evidence. And in a case where the alleged basis for disclosing the limitation is that it's neither expressly taught nor inherently present, for the board to make those findings when no one on the board is a person of ordinary skill in the art is inappropriate. And the court could use this case to clarify, not
fact,
in a context.
Fact finders all the time make findings from the perspective of persons of skill in the art, even without themselves being of skill in the art. So I'm not sure that that argument gets you very far.
But the findings here are based upon a record where Mr. Malika and Mr. Della Sensory provided undisputed evidence on behalf of the patent owner that the lottery systems.
But the board read the patent and disagrees with your experts. I mean, the patent is itself evidence, isn't it?
I'm sorry, the patent owner's patent, the 894 patent?
No, the reference.
The Shrek reference.
The Shrek reference is evidence. The board can read it and it disagree with your expert's reading of it. I mean, it cited the portions in the reference that it says supports its views. I know you disagree, but I mean, that's the way the board read it. And I mean, if we find that the places it cited support the board, then it's a substantial evidence case, isn't it?
We don't think so, Your Honor, because the board didn't apply this court's precedence on inherency, and instead,
I really don't understand why we're getting caught up in this. I mean, maybe the board would have been better to be clear about what it was doing, but it read the reference and said, this is what the reference teaches us. And even though the specific words you want to find aren't there, it said the reference still teaches that. I don't know that that's necessarily inherency. It could just be an express disclosure in other words. And it said this reference necessarily includes, and I don't want to use the word necessarily because then you're going to tell me that's inherency. They said the reference discloses this limitation.
If I could just add, it might be implicit disclosure. I mean, the board read it and sees it there. Aren't they allowed to do that?
I don't think the board can do that in this case where the expert concedes that there's no express disclosure. Counsel concedes there's no express disclosure, and then the board draws inferences.
The board doesn't have, if they think both experts are wrong, they can disregard the expert testimony, right? That's the first place they go to determine whether something's disclosed is the reference.
Yes, I recognize that the board purports to make findings based upon its own interpretation, not supported by the expert testimony proffered by the petition, and also purportedly by reading in between the lines regarding a disclosure that Mr. Hutton, the expert for the other side, acknowledged was not necessarily present on the face of Schreck. And we believe that the error, both as a matter of law and also in terms of the fact findings, is that on a record where at best the inference being drawn is about the possibility of a disclosure that's not expressly made being supported by an inference.
On the purported legal error, what authority do you cite that says the board cannot read a reference to implicitly disclose something that maybe no expert says is there? What authority prevents them from doing that?
Well, there are two cases discussed in the record, Judge Stark. One is the Eli Lilly versus Los Angeles Biomedical Research case. That case was cited by the petitioners. It actually supports our view of the appropriate outcome here. The court held in that case that to anticipate, a reference must do more than suggest the claimed subject matter.
But a fact finder can find it does more than suggest. It discloses, just not in the words that would make it an express disclosure. But does Eli Lilly say a fact finder can't do that?
No, the facts of this case, though, are very similar to the Eli Lilly case, in that at page 43 of the appendix, the board said that the Schreck reference suggests.
But I guess I'm more focused on the purported legal error. Sure. I understand you think the facts don't support what the board found, but does Eli Lilly say a fact finder like the board can't read into a prior art reference and see something there that may not be there in black and white, but is implicitly there and would be understood by one of skill in the art? Just as a legal matter, do we say they can't do that sort of thing?
I understand under this court's precedence that the requirement is either to have an express disclosure, words on the page, or to have an inherent disclosure.
And so you're saying there is no other way a fact finder can find something in a prior art reference. It's just those two possibilities.
That's correct.
And so
that's
I'm
supported.
Asking you, where have we said
so
that?
Personal Web Technologies versus Apple is another case that recognizes that a disclosure could be express or it could be inherent.
And goes on to say there's no other way to find something in a reference.
Now, my understanding of this court's precedence is that to be an anticipatory disclosure, you must have an express disclosure, words on the page, or you need to satisfy the more rigorous standard for inherency necessarily.
But does it have to be the exact words? If it's expressing the same concept in different words, then that's an express disclosure, isn't it? That's not inherency, it's an express disclosure.
Hypothetically, in another case, I would agree with you. In this case, where both opposing counsel and Mr. Hutton conceded
again,
it's not
can
there.
You just, I mean, I don't care about any of those concessions because the board just read this reference. So if you put away all those concessions, if the board looked at this and said, they don't use this precise language, but we read this reference to disclose that concept nonetheless, they can do that, and they don't have to do that under inherency, right?
I disagree. I think that in a circumstance where the words are not on the page and you're not talking about obviousness, I would have a different answer for you if the argument was obvious.
I don't understand how that can possibly be the law, particularly in some of these complicated software cases and things like that, where everybody makes up their own language for concepts. And one company may use language X and one company may use language Y. If they're the same concept, it's not inherency. It's just a different way of expressing the same thing. Now, I know you disagree that this is a different way of expressing the same thing, but that's finding an express disclosure, not an inherency disclosure, isn't it?
Only in a circumstance where there's support in the record that an expert would have understood it that way, and that's absent in this case.
Why does there need to be support that an expert would understand it that way? Couldn't the board or whoever the fact finder read it and say, yes, this is the same concept being disclosed?
If there was support, I should have said, from a person of ordinary skill in the art, perhaps not an expert, then I would agree with you, but not in a case where that evidence is missing. And I recognize I'm into my rebuttal time. Unless the court has other questions, I'll reserve that time.
We will save it for you, Mr. McPherson.
Good morning, Your Honors. Patrick McPherson, Dwayne Mars, for the appellee. This is a parallel disclosure case. The 894 patent and Schreck are both directed to the same problem. They propose the same solution, and they use the same architecture. However, they use different words to describe the same concept. That does not get you to inherency. As Judge Hughes was just discussing, the standard really is what does the reference convey to a person of ordinary skill in the art?
Well, the reference requires a receipt, right?
Yes.
Which is what the claims purportedly try to avoid?
I'm not sure what you mean by trying to avoid.
Well, let's read the claim.
The claim term at issue is providing to the lottery administration
payment confirmation.
That's the claim term that's at issue. And the board identified the facts that it said supported that. And one of them was Schreck discloses the pre-printed lottery ticket is not eligible to win unless payment and activation occurs. So a person of ordinary skill in the art, unless payment occurs means payment confirmation must be determined. That's what our expert said.
So you're saying the receipt is payment confirmation?
The receipt could be, but in this instance, it's something else. Because it goes on to say, the cash register would get authorization for payment for the winning tickets as part of the validation process. And the board relied on that. So that means it's not the cash register doing it, and the cash register has the receipt, but it's getting authorization from somewhere else. And the next fact they relied on is Schreck says the game provider could check if the ticket 300 is a winner and could send information back that the ticket is a winner and authorize winner payment. And the board said, and we know what's required for authorizing winner payment, it has to be activated and you need the payment has to occur. That's payment confirmation. That's the claim limitation disclosed using different words. It's an express disclosure. It's not inherent disclosure. Now, that's the facts before the board. And under standard substantial evidence, could a reasonable mind say that's adequate to support the conclusion of the board, the conclusion that Judge Lurie wrote, that one of skill in the art would understand that the payment confirmation was provided to the lottery administration so they could authorize payment? Yes. But if you look further than that, what did the appellant tell the board those facts meant? They didn't tell the board anything. They said, it doesn't mean that. But they didn't say, what does it mean? Right? So there's no facts for what that means other than our experts. And the board understood that and agreed with it. And these are not the type of facts that a judge can't read for himself and say, yeah, of course, in order to have payment authorization, you need to have the two requirements. So this is a case where there's no inherency here. This is an express disclosure to one of skill and knowledge.
Your friend insists no expert said there's an express disclosure and that counsel on your side also agreed there's no express disclosure. Is he factually correct about the record?
He's factually incorrect. I'm the counsel. and my position has always been, and I think the law's there, and my Latin's not that good, but there's something about in hic verba, that the support for a claim does not need to be verbatim. And every time that question was asked, I would always say, the words do not say payment confirmation. I was very clear that it does not expressly use the same language as the claims verbatim.
And what about your expert or any other witness testimony? Where in the record can we find it saying the payment confirmation limitation is expressly disclosed in Shrek?
The question was always posed, does this say that? And the answer is no. So then it must be inherent. And we're objecting to it because that's a legal conclusion. Our expert says, yeah, it doesn't say that. And so counsel is saying, well, then it must be inherent. And our expert says, well, yes, because it doesn't say that. So the language that our experts use, and we're objecting to because it's really a legal conclusion of whether something's inherent or not, is this the words don't say that. And we agree the words do not say that.
So you never had your expert affirmatively support your argument that one of skill in the art would read this as disclosed in Shrek.
No, our expert did say that.
And where can I find that?
Where the board relied on their citation to one of skill in the art, and they went through what our expert said was the state of the art, and they identify references.
Give me some pages, please.
Sure. If we turn to page, should be appendix page 44, I think.
44? In the board decision?
Yes. Starting on page 43.
And they're citing to your expert somewhere in 43, 44?
On 43, they're citing to the exact same language our expert cited to on Shrek.
Are they citing to Shrek or are they citing to your expert analyzing Shrek?
They're citing to the exact same portions of Shrek that are expert identified by line number.
But as best as we can tell, they're doing the work themselves. They're not saying we find substantial evidence in the petitioner's expert testimony, correct?
No, I wouldn't go there. There's language that the board says on page 44, they say, taking into account the knowledge, reasonable inferences, and creativity that a skilled artisan possessed at the time of the invention, which indisputably included a recognition that the lottery administration defines the information that must be provided to activate a ticket, we find a natural result flowing from the game provider system being able to determine a winning ticket and provide authorization of a winning ticket, is that the store back office provided payment confirmation for the ticket to the game provider system before that determination. As such, we find Shrek's disclosure sufficient to establish a skilled artisan that the store back office would include an instruction to cause a payment confirmation for the pre-printed lottery ticket to be provided to the game provider system.
I don't know that you need expert support in order to meet the substantial evidence standard, but I would like to know whether you think you have expert support. I can read what the board found in Shrek. They may be right about it, but do you have expert support for what the board says is in Shrek?
Okay, I think we're two ships passing. Our expert identified the factual basis for saying why this claim limitation and showed the claim limitation was found and then cited to Shrek. So on a claim-by-claim basis, when he got down to the payment confirmation limitation, he says, a person working with skill in the art would understand this discloses that. The board then adopted that position. And in adopting that position, they say taking into account the knowledge, that was the preface for going there. So
then I think all I'm asking is, do you know where I can find where your expert said, here's what a person of skill in the art would, where they would find the payment confirmation disclosed in Shrek?
Yeah, I misunderstood your question. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That may not have been clear.
On page 47 and 48 and 49,
those are sites to the board.
I'm sorry. Appendix page 151.
150. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Which is our petition at page 47. So it's appendix 151, 152, and 153. Our expert goes through and identifies where Schreck has this.
Thank you.
And finishes up thus a person, and it finishes up on page 153. Thus, a person of ordinary skill in the art understood that Schreck discloses providing payment confirmation to the lottery administration. So that was part of the record from which the board then pulled those sites and put it into their decision. But I do agree with
you. So even if the board didn't specifically cite your expert, the expert's report can still be substantial evidence for its conclusion.
Yes, Judge Hughes. And I want to go where you went before and where I think Judge Stark was going. The judge of the board themselves can read Schreck. This is a case where the technology is not that deep or hard that the judges can't understand for themselves and do that. So this is a case where the judges could have done that independent and cite those exact same facts.
Schreck does teach at column 6, line 62 to 64, that for claiming or payment of a lottery prize, the pre-printed ticket needs to be presented along with the cash register receipt. Is that not Schreck telling one of skill of the art that you always have to have the receipt as well as the ticket?
No, Your Honor, because I think if you continue reading there, you're looking at the board. This was before the board as well, and the board said no. What the next line says, in a case of any dispute, the cash register receipt with ticket activation information such as price, the activation authorization code needs to be presented. So in a dispute, you could use your cash register receipt for that. And I go back to say that this is a parallel disclosure case. If you look at what the 894 patent has, it has the same disclosure. And it talks about providing the cash register receipt. In case of, you provide the printed receipt, and that's used to confirm activation. So even though it's not required, you would provide it in case there's some type of authentication you want to show. And that's in the appendix, page 84. That's column 3. It's 19 through 24. It's a parallel disclosure of using the cash register receipt, not for payment confirmation, but to show activation. So both the 894 and Schreck disclose that.
This is an obviousness case, correct?
It's an obviousness case overall. There were 53 claims, some of which we had to rely on modifying Schreck with the knowledge of personal ordinary skill in the art. Other claims, like claim 1, we showed that the Schreck disclosure disclosed each and every limitation there. Overall, the board found it was obvious under 103 because that's the ground we put forward, but not every single claim required an obviousness analysis. Claim 1 did not require an obviousness analysis.
Have we talked about the concept of an implicit disclosure in context with an obviousness analysis? Another way to put it is, if I disagree with you that Schreck expressly discloses the payment confirmation limitation, and you say this isn't about inherency, does that mean you lose?
Well, no, because something that expressed can also be inherent, and this may be one of those cases. For example, there is a embodiment here where the board found it's necessary for that information.
Why is there not a third category? It's not inherent, it's not expressed, but it's implicit.
I do not subscribe to Appellant's argument that it's either expressed or inherent. I don't think that's the law. I think the law is the reference must reasonably convey to a person of ordinary skill in the art. And that can be done many different ways, not one, not two, not three. And I think this board's jurisprudence sometimes uses the term to get away from the express, because you can see how it could be used against me that I agreed it was no express disclosure. The court sometimes use the word actual disclosure, which is something not just expressly stated, but if it's understood by one of skill in the art, that's an actual disclosure, even though different words are used. Like in this case, same concept, different words used. That's an actual disclosure. And if you start using express, then it's express words or express concepts, and that's where it gets a little murky. But I think here, the facts are clear here, and the facts are substantial evidence for which the board properly found that that limitation was disclosed in Schreck. And there's no further questions, I'll sit down. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Conlon has some rebuttal time.
A few quick points in closing. I would like to direct the court to Appendix 2666, where counsel said it does not expressly say that, no, with respect to the payment confirmation disclosure in Shrek. Again, repeated, I agree it's not expressly stated, but even though it's not expressly stated, it can still be understood by one of skill in the art. That takes us then, again, that's at 2666, that takes us to Mr. Hutton. If you unpack what's actually at Appendix 569, Mr. Hutton's opinion is that payment confirmation must be provided. That's the entirety of his analysis. That's the entirety of his opinion. He parrots the language and says it must be provided. Now, when asked during deposition what that meant, Mr. Hutton said twice at Appendix 1406 and then Appendix 1408, the assumption is that it was sent. We made the assumption that Shrek certainly would have included payment confirmation. That's the record we were confronted as the patent owner with responding to when our patent owner responds.
And for you to win, we have to find that no reasonable fact finder could agree with that, that could not possibly add up to substantial evidence. That's what we have to find, right?
Or if you agree with me, where also Mr. Hutton also testified during deposition that his theory was one of inherent disclosure, which we cited in our papers, that when their expert is agreeing that it's an inherency theory, and there's no showing that the inherency standard is met on these facts where he agrees that's his theory, that there isn't an inherent disclosure and that the board should not have found the limitation present. Unless the court has any other questions, we'll rest on that.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is submitted, and this concludes today's arguments.